We live in a retirement village in Thousand Oaks.
California.
California. All right. And that's just 3 blocks away from California Lutheran University. And so we figure we have a good setup because I am still associated with California Lutheran University. I retired in 1980, and I have taught a course every semester since that time. And so that's one way I am facing retirement. Doris has been involved with the university as well. So being close by, we like that environment because a lot of things go on at the university campus that we can be a part of. And that really enriches our life in that sense. Furthermore, we started pioneering retirement courses and workshops with the Aid Association for Lutherans. And they developed a program which they called the SMART program. And some of you may have heard of this. And I'll pass this brochure around and you can see what it involved. But basically what it was an 8-week course. And we took 2 to 3 hours for each session. So we covered all of the aspects of pre-retirement and retirement in those work sessions. We had from 16 to 30 people in each session. And we did this for a number of years, for over 10 years. And the program is still going on. We're still available to teach it in the Thousand Oaks area. And we haven't taught one in the last year. But I think we've exhausted the demand for it. So
is that 2 or 3 hours per week?
Per week, yeah. Yes. So it's rather exhausting. And we'll just send it around. And I might just tell you the kinds of things that we consider. And basically what we want to do tonight is just kind of lay out some things for you to think about. And then have the participation of this group. You know, many of you have things that you can contribute to this in terms of ideas. And it'll be helpful to all of us to hear from one another. So we'll just kind of keep it open. And if you have any input at any point, just come on strong with it, you know. The announcement was we're going to face this boldly. So be bold in what you have to say about retirement, and we'll be glad to listen. So let me tell you the topics that we considered and had a session of at least 2 hours with each one of these. First, we started out with attitude. What's your basic attitude about retirement? Do you dread it? Or are you ready for it, waiting for it, or are you already in it, you know, as we are? So your question of attitude, are you comfortable with the thought of being retired? You know, that's a major kind of thing to start off with. Then we got into financial resources. If you're going to retire, what are you going to retire on? You know, and how are you going to manage this? And so financial resources. First thing we did was to make a complete inventory of our finances in terms of net worth. Now these are private. You know, we do not ask people to share in this, but we ask each individual to make a net worth statement. Where do you stand financially? All your debts, all your assets. Put them together. If you had to liquidate everything today, what would be your net asset that you have to work with? Then the point that we make in the next session, it relates to financial planning. Because basically when you are retired, you become a financial manager. You manage the resources that you have accumulated up to that point. And you're a manager. You're no longer going to be an earner, but you're going to be a manager. And you've got to manage well so as to make things come out right for you in the long run. That amounts to how do you invest? How do you protect your nest egg? And what do you do in terms of financial planning?
May I say one thing before we go any further? That most everyone who took our course at the end of the course said, we should have done this years ago. So don't worry about your being too young to plan for retirement. The younger the better, because it takes an awful long time to be ready.
We think from 35 years on, you really ought to be into this, you know, in terms of planning and implement things as you go along with a long-range plan. Then the next major topic, which is always an interesting one, is leisure time. What are you going to do with the time that you will have that you do not work and you're still healthy, hopefully, and you've got roughly, the statisticians tell us that you can count on, if you retire at 65 and in reasonable health, you've got 30,000 free hours. What are you going to do with 30,000 free hours? Where you don't have to go to work, you don't have to beat the pavement and commute and get ready for work and all of that. You've got 30,000 hours, plus or minus. So, next major session, health and welfare. Not only your physical health, but your mental health, your welfare, your spiritual health. How do you manage this, and how do you approach it? Are you in good health? Can you do the things you want to do in retirement? Do you have the health to do what your long-range plan calls for? And that's very important. And lots of things to talk about in this connection. Everything from exercise to good diagnostic work that you need to have maybe at the retirement age and all of that. So, you know, your annual checkup becomes an important kind of thing at this stage in life. All right, in the next major session, we deal with housing. How are you going to house yourself in retirement? Well, to kind of just give you a thumbnail sketch of what we have done, and then you can be thinking about what you'd like to share. We moved from our relatively large house. We needed a large house in Thousand Oaks because at that point I was dean of the college, dean of the university, and we entertained a lot, faculty and so on, so we needed a big home. But when I got too old to be dean, then you see it was time to start making some changes. And so one of the things we did was to get out of our big house. We didn't need four bedrooms and all of that extra space. So we moved to Leisure Village, which is a retirement community. And we had a nice duplex with plenty of space for us. And we shed a lot of furniture. And fortunately, we had two daughters in the area. And we had a program that we were sponsoring at the university. So We got rid of our furniture one place or another so we could move into smaller quarters. And now we go to visit our furniture. So wherever we go, we seem to find
pieces. We feel at home.
Yeah, we feel at home with our that sort of thing. Well, okay, in terms of housing, one of the major concerns is whether you stay put or move someplace else. Well, we stayed in Leisure Village for 6 years. Then we thought it was time that we made one further change, and that was to move to a facility which had nursing care available. We didn't need it at that point, But we both know there is a time coming when we're going to need nursing care and kinds of care we don't have to have right now. So we have moved and made the decision we would do this together while we were still together and moved to a retirement facility, a retirement village. And now we're still in an independent situation. We have our own apartment, and with 1,100 square feet, that's enough. And with what furniture we have at home yet, you know, we get along fine. We have a kitchen, and we do our own cooking when we want to, but we have meals available. And so we take one meal a day at the dining room, and we have our own lunch together and our own breakfast at home.
That's my secret for retirement.
Good.
Okay. Well, that's the way that works out. Now, the last session, kind of the getting into the wind down of this, we look at final arrangements. Final arrangements. You know, the time will come when you do have to make arrangements for a spouse. Only one is going to survive the other. And which one it will be, you never know. And so it's important to think that through. And when you think that through, you know, that means what do you do with your estate? What do you do about a will? What do you do about a trust? What do you do about all of these kinds of things that become important at that point? Because you can still have control if you set it up to where you know what's going to happen to what you leave behind. And you know how you want things done. And if you don't make that arrangement, somebody will make it for you after you're gone, and the state will be glad to take care of your money. You know, and none of it will go to charity. That you can be sure of. So, you know, if you don't make your own will and make your own decisions about that, nothing will move on to the kinds of things maybe you have supported, you see, all of your life. But if you don't provide for that after you're gone, it won't happen. Can't happen. The state can't do that. You know, and they will not put your money into charitable things. So that's something to think about. Final session. Count your blessings. Count your blessings, you know, all the good things. And look at retirement from the point of view of the wonderful things you have. You have earned, you have your background, all your friends, your family, and all of the blessings you could name. You know, you could write a whole list of them that are major blessings. And so that's kind of the last session. Now, I've kind of laid it all out. What do you want to add?
Well, I've been reading this book by Paul Tournier. Most of you know him and respect his writing. And he's a very wise man. This one is in the library, and I'm going to get it back there in another day or two. It's called Learn to Grow Old. And one of the things that he emphasizes is that don't think that you're going to be satisfied with, you know, playing golf all the time. That can get pretty tiresome. And don't think that you're going to fish all the time. Maybe Rudy could and be happy, but most people wouldn't. They eventually think that there's something else to living than just entertaining myself. So he suggests that as you grow old, you learn to do other things besides what your profession is and dabble in that before you do retire. And he highly recommends a second career. Think of what else you could do besides what you're doing now, if you can do what you do now. Of course, he was a doctor, and he writes and spends a lot of his time doing this, and feels that he is doing something worthwhile. But that's the point he emphasized. Do something worthwhile, something that you can get really steamed up about. Maybe a volunteer job. Rudy spends all of his time volunteering. Why don't you give him a rundown of just some of the things that you volunteer for?
Yeah, I'm not at home. So, one of the things in the community that I'm very much involved in with a group called Senior Concerns. And we are an organized board, and we have in charge in Thousand Oaks the Meals on Wheels program. That's one of our major programs. And we have had a dial-a-ride for senior citizens. And we also have a senior services advisor that we sponsor. And we have a house, a regular home, where we have, in a sense, care for frail elderly who are at home with maybe children or family, and they need to go to work, and they need a place for the senior parent to go where they can be taken care of for the day. It's like babysitting. You see, at the age of 70, 80, most of the people we have in this home average 80 to 90 years, and some almost 100. And they come on a day, and they spend the day, and there are people who come and volunteer to do things with them and help them in every way, and then their children come and pick them up at the end of the day. And it's a wonderful service that we find is very important. So that's one of the major kinds of things that I'm involved with in Thousand Oaks. And other things.
Well, the ombudsman.
Yeah, we're on the board, the county board, for the ombudsman program, which is a federal mandated kind of overseeing of all licensed facilities. You know, the ombudsman are to come in to any facility.
Retirement facility, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a license, state license or federal license. And be an intermediary with the people and the management. So if they have concerns, they have gripes, they can tell the ombudsman, and we in turn try to then iron it out with the management. And hopefully we can settle these things without them becoming major problems. If they turn out to be major problems and the management will not solve it, then it has to be reported to the state or federal government, and something has to be done about the license. You know, they lose their license if this kind of thing goes on too far. Well, we're involved in that.
Yeah, and then being connected with the college, Rudy's a professor emeritus, and they put him on every committee that comes along. Planning committees. He planned the science building, the chapel. What else?
That's enough. Yeah, well, that's true. I'm very much involved at the university, and I volunteer. You know, I don't get paid. Yes, I do. I get $1 a year. I insist on a contract, because that way they can fire me. You see, if I'm not doing a good job, they can tell me I'm not earning my money and cancel the contract. So I do have a contract for the course I teach, but it's for $1. and that kind of thing, plus all the committee work and so on. So that keeps me busy.
He has a lot of fun, but we have to get up sometimes. Get him to a breakfast meeting at 7:30 to some of these, and I didn't think that was retirement.
Well, then you're probably going to bed early.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But he enjoys it so.
And well, what comment do you have? What do you want to share? You know, this is the kind of a sharing session. So, tell us.
Well, are you glad he's gone more, or would you like to be doing more? I mean, how would you see your point of view?
Are you glad that I'm gone?
No, I'm not. He has his study. I don't know whether he's there or not. So I kind of like to have him close, so if I want to ask him some questions, I can. No, he's never been underfoot. Because he's always so busy doing his thing, whether it's, you know, whether it's in our house or at the college or wherever.
I think I'd like to say, too, you said that they need to do it earlier, and, you know, and I concur with that, that you can't start too early. Yeah. And that you need to do thorough planning. That was part of my job, and I had a tough time convincing the younger people, younger by, I mean, 35 to 40 to 45 even, that they should start planning retirement. I mean, you just, it's tough to try to convince them they need to, but they really do.
Okay, that's good thought. One of the things we have, each person who is in our pre-retirement workshops, the eight-week session, do is there's a book, you know, like where you keep track of all of these things on an individual basis. So all the spouse, you see, each one would have their own book. AAL, Aid Association for Lutherans, provides all of this in the program. There is no cost to taking the program. All of the material is furnished free. So if you want to contact your local Aid Association agent, wherever you live, you know, and ask them about this. We have been advertising this up here, you know, for 10 years or more. And we get the report back that they hear from a lot of you people who go home. You know, and you check it out with them and they get things started.
And you and people who have been here have become leaders.
Yeah, and provide teaching for this kind of session because they take you back to Appleton and prepare you to teach these sessions so that you're not totally on your own. That's helpful.
I can second what you said because I went through this about 10 years ago and it was very good.
Oh, good. All right. That's fine.
Tell them about the Senior Mentor Program.
Oh, well, we started another thing, Senior Mentor Program at the university. And what that is we invite a professor and his wife who are retired to come to our campus. We provide a place for them to live, an apartment, so with cooking facilities and so on. And so they have a modest apartment furnished. They don't have to bring any furniture. And then in order to mix with the students, they are given a meal, at least one meal a day, in the cafeteria or the commons or wherever students eat, and are encouraged to mingle with college students in that way and become acquainted. Now this we started during the 60s and the late 60s and 70s, when the gender, you know, the gap, the age gap became very much accentuated, and the younger people were rebelling, the college students. And so we thought the best way to get at this was to bring some grandpas and grandmas onto campus and let them mingle with them. You know, their parents are a threat to them at that age. When they're in college, the parents sometimes, you know, they're not so compatible, maybe with their parents. But grandparents are posed no threat whatsoever. You know, they're off kind of on the side. And they can mingle. And they learn something about aging, something about people who are of our age.
They found out that all old people are not senile. Yeah. And we have had some of the most brilliant people imaginable there teaching. Well, name some of them.
Well, we started out with O.P. Kretzma, from president, you see, of Valpo, who came, spent a semester. And we had Joe Sittler. And how much higher can you go? You know, he was there on campus for a semester. And we had Arnie Flotten from St. Olaf and his wife, head of the art department for 27 years. Came in, was on campus, had his own carvings and set up on the back patio. Students came in, just circulated through, you know.
Mrs. Flotten would serve cookies and lemonade.
Yeah, so. You know, it was a great place. It was a wonderful experience. And we had the Arbaughs, George Arbaugh, who was former dean of Augustana College at Rock Island. He was at Pacific Lutheran at the time, living there. So we brought him in. And that's just a few.
This year we had that president.
Yeah, we had a president of one of the colleges, one of the state colleges up in Wisconsin.
Dr. Rose
and his wife. And the wife usually finds something, you know, that interests her on campus. And the whoever is brought in teaches one, maybe two courses, you know, during the semester, and things that they like to teach, you know, so that it becomes a two-way street. Something that they thoroughly enjoy, and something that the students get something from.
And they often take a course, too.
Yeah.
Joe Sittler took his geology course.
Yeah, I had him in my class for a whole semester. Can you imagine that? It was wonderful.
Doris, what do you do with your retirement time? I have just retired out of June 30th, and I'm just kind of, for now, I'm just going to enjoy, but I've worked almost all my married life, and I know that just keeping a house isn't going to keep me satisfied.
Well, I tell you, the last year I taught at Augustana College, I had developed a laboratory school for four-year-olds. So I became sort of an early childhood specialist. And during that teaching, it was in the early 60s, and there were no how-to-do books in the early childhood. You had to make up your own curriculum because, of course, now you can get all kinds of books on curriculum for preschoolers, but they didn't have any then. We were just kind of getting started. It was at the very beginning of the Head Start. We trained Head Start teachers and that sort of thing. But during those years, I developed a curriculum for preschoolers. And it was a card file arrangement. And the student teachers who worked with me said, why don't you have this published? Because they'd come up and copy the cards, the ideas on the cards. On the weekends. And I said, well, I don't have time to get it into publishable form. So, at that time, while I was teaching, so then when we moved to California, I decided that would be a good time to retire from the active teaching and write. So I published this course for early childhood education. And when I got through with that, I started teaching teachers in the graduate school at Cal Lutheran. I did that for 4 years, and then I had health problems. So since then, I've been kind of babying myself and trying to stay well. That's one thing we have to do when we age. Things start breaking down. They say that after 70, it's just patch, patch, patch. With Rudy, it hasn't been that way, but with me, it has. I I had glomerulonephritis and was in the hospital for a couple of weeks and never did regain complete health after that. So I've tried to stay away from any kind of stress. And this place where we live now is ideal. I don't have to feel guilty.
You know, have you got any handout packets with, you know, budget planning, checklist, and so forth available for retirement, other than taking the course? You know, any printed material that's available in a printed packet form?
There are things that are available. I don't have anything to show you at this point, but...
Well, AARP does have...
AARP
That's
has
right.
some very good things. Right.
The good suggestion.
How many of you here might belong to AARP? There's several hands, yeah. And that's a source where you can get very good and very reliable kinds of things. Aid Association for Lutherans does not pass out their study material unless you're a part of the course. So that's not available immediately, but I think if you would contact AARP, whether you belong or not, you know, you would find that. And go to the local library. You know, your local library will have good information on this. And we found that to be true in our library, both school and city. So go to the library and check it out, and you'll find good resource material. A lot of government things. Lots of state things that are available. So, you know, there is no dearth of kinds of things you can read. Good books on retirement, financial planning, various kinds of things. But, you know, I would use your own good judgment about a lot of this. You can get a lot of advice from people that, unless you know people and know what they're telling you, particularly in financial circles, older people are very vulnerable. You know, it's very true, and you have to be careful.
We had it.
And here.
Yeah.
I'm one of those 35-year-olds. What type of, you know, I mean, you know, the concerns, you know, that I have, you know, I got two little kids, and I'm wondering how in the world I'm ever going to get them through school. I'd like to send them to a private school if possible, rather than, you know, all that concern, to putting away for that, plus just paying your regular bills. What types of advice and planning do you give to 35-year-olds, or, you know, or starting that age to... Are you talking financial, or are you talking...
Not only.
Mind.
Yeah, mainly a mindset and attitude. And think about the next career you're going to have. I don't know what you're doing now. But
I'm a pastor.
You're a pastor. Well, you know, there comes a point when you may want to do...
Counseling.
You'll be retired. You may want to do something else. Counseling, various kinds of social ministry, and so on. But figure out, you know, the next move ahead as much as you can. It's always nice to have the next step planned, you know, where you might want to go. Now, if you have long-range ambitions about doing certain things, my point is the time to get started with that really is while you're 35.
Save a little out of each paycheck. Even
doesn't
if it's just
to
a little
much,
bit.
You know, it's amazing how it adds up in the long run, and particularly education. You're at the age when you may want to take some other courses, university, to prepare you for a next career. And I don't know, you just have to kind of think it through on your own to see what fits you. You know, every person is different, and we don't have all the answers. We just say, go after it, you know, boldly, and do what you want to do as much as you can and prepare for it. Yeah?
Something else I think that each couple should look at is the potential of at retirement being alone.
Yes.
I retired last year and also lost my husband.
Yeah.
And You know, so that puts a whole different plan on things. You know, you're planning this wonderful retirement, and the things that you will do together. And then you pick up the pieces and go on.
And that's especially true with living arrangements. Mm-hmm. I know so many people say, oh, well, we don't want to move into a retirement village now. We're too young. But I said, stop and think. Is it better to move in when there are two of you? Or wait until there's just one? And then that person has the adjustment to make, not only to being alone, but to be moving to a different place.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Who else? Yes, Fred?
Rudy, I've been retired about a year and a half now. I second your feelings about volunteering. Our experience was a bit different from yours in that we elected to relocate. You know, we married off a son and then sold our house and moved out of the Bay Area, I thought it was Oregon. But I had always been interested in the literacy program, you know, teaching illiterates how to read.
English is a second language.
Yeah, it's such a waste when people can't read and write. And I enrolled in a training course for that in Bend, but it turned out I wound up tutoring, but not tutoring illiterates. They needed a tutor for a night school at the high school, so I find myself tutoring two or three nights a week at the high school, all seniors, but I've enjoyed it.
Oh, I bet.
It's been great. I tutor everything from earth science to American history to algebra to whatever. It's been fun. And you're right, I do play some golf and I do some fishing, but you need more than that.
Yep. Okay. All right. Yes, Don?
Well, I waited almost 6 months before I started retiring to think much about it. Then I realized I had to do something. You know, I knew what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to watch TV and I didn't want to sit on a bar stool all day. So I started out slowly with one shelter, and it just snowballed, and now I'm involved with five, mm-hmm. and I have something to do almost every day. I'm on the staff of one.
Of one what?
I'm on the staff of one shelter.
Oh, shelter.
Yeah, I'm the board of directors of another, and just keep snowballing until now I finally have to say no to some of them. Mm-hmm. But something to do every day to get you up and get you going.
That's important.
And then I get to tutor, something I never got to do when I was teaching. Now I get to go to our parish school and work with kindergarten kids.
Wonderful.
And that's the fun thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We had a couple about 7 years ago were gifted with an early retirement, and he was about 60 years old, and at that time, when he retired, he came to me and said, Pastor, I'd like to, my wife and I, we'd like to give some time to the church. And he comes from, he was an executive in an executive management position, and he has been lay administrator of our church for the past 7 years. Started out at 4 days a week. Well, went about 3 years, but went down to 3 years, 3 days a week. And that's he and his wife together. They want to do this together.
Good.
And so they both have been serving. And what an aid this has been to our church. But their witness was so clear to everyone. They clearly, by their lifestyle, and just as you are sharing, so many of you here, you're an inspiration to us all. Life and health is a gift of God. That we have retirement, that isn't something that we deserve. It's a gift of God's grace. Mm-hmm. And these people emulated that to the congregation, and it just inspired such a spirit of volunteerism on the part of others. It has just been a snowballing effect.
Wonderful.
And when you look at the stewardship, and stewardship is right now, you know, and we have one life to live. We have a singular purpose for living, to serve our Lord, to give glory to Him. And I don't think we, in that sense, we ever retire.
No.
But if we have the privilege to retire and to make some different selections, some different choices, what a privilege that is.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. You go from something to something, you know. And that's the important thing in retirement, is having something that you can do, you know, that you like to do. Yes, I have a
one comment I would like to make. I've been retired now for, let's see, it's 6 years.
Six years.
I've had quite a bit of experience. I took a course in a junior college, first thing when I retired, on volunteerism.
Good.
And, you know, how you evaluate what you really want to do. And one of the things they cautioned us about was to not overcommit yourself. You know, if you're going to try working for an organization, don't tell them you're going to be there forever. You know, tell them you'd like to try it for 3 months or whatever. And so you've got an out. You know, if it isn't the thing that you really like to do, you shouldn't stay in it.
Exactly.
I think you're wise to get out and evaluate if that's the thing you really want to do.
Good advice.
I work, for instance, at the university in the Children's Research Library to begin with, and I did it for a year and enjoyed it, but I spent almost 3 hours a day on transportation. It was impossible to bring my own car to the campus. The campus was so overloaded with cars in the daytime, and to me, that wasn't a wise use of my time, so after a year,
Very good. Anybody else want to get in on this? Yes.
I'd like to say for the young pastor over here, I'm a retired pastor, and one of the most difficult situations with my wife and I have is that we don't have any housing. So if your congregation, or you people here and members of congregations, make sure your pastor gets a housing allowance. We never got one, and that's been our handicap now when we're retired, is not have a housing allowance.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very important.
We couldn't build up an equity in a home. Yeah. If you got a housing allowance, you can build up an equity, and you've got something, at least some resources there when you retire, if you want to turn it in or whatever you want to do with it.
I think most pastors are getting that now.
Many of them are, but there's still some that aren't.
Well, maybe not.
And they're going back to parsonages in a lot of places too, because they've had some trouble selling their houses after.
But then they provide a housing allowance, don't they?
They
no. Well, some do. I don't know. I think they did a. I'm from Iowa, but they did a statistical survey. I don't think 20% of the pastors that live in parsonages get what they call an equity allowance to allow you to build
right.
up to buy another house. I mean, they can give you a utility allowance,
right.
but you know, you're paying your utilities, so you know that type of thing. But housing equity, in Iowa, it isn't that many. Maybe in other states there's more.
Minnesota has some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the problem of housing, do you find the pension to be adequate?
Actually, financially we're better off retired than we're working.
did you do other things to save?
No.
Other than
just Social Security and pension works out nicely.
Okay. Okay.
Can anybody comment on nursing home insurance? Do you have any comments about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, not directly. We work with nursing homes that are licensed in the Ombudsman program, and also I work with them in senior concerns. And we fortunately, I think, in Thousand Oaks have pretty good nursing homes, and situation is good, but that's not true in many places. And I know that nursing homes sometimes that are in it for the money, you know, that then they abuse their privileges, and sometimes it's not a very good situation for the senior, the elderly, the frail elderly. We're facing, you know, as we go into the next decade, more and more older people that are going to have difficulties in relationship to their nursing home care and their finances. Because we live longer, our money runs out, and they are faced with some poverty situations in which the nursing home, if they have difficulty in taking on very many of these patients because the funds that come in from the state are not adequate to take care of the kind of care that they need. And we've had some difficulty in our own county that way. And there are no beds left for the people that really need them. And they have to send them off to another county that has beds. And this is a very bad situation. They're removed from their friends, you know, and they're simply put in a home, someplace removed that they've never been to. And, you know, look out for parents or for people of that kind and see if you can be helpful in any way, too.
My husband went into a nursing home, but we took out nursing home insurance 2 years before he went in. Right. He has Alzheimer's, and he's in a very good nursing home.
That's right.
And gets very good care. Yep. But we took out the insurance, so we are fully protected. I have it, too, and I think everybody should have it.
Is that really
because
expensive?
It really is expensive. How do you
know, though, when you're ready for it, that that nursing home is still going to be in operation? In Oregon, a lot of
it's
them get
not
closed.
No, it's not
the nursing
home. It isn't specific.
Okay, okay.
May I ask what nursing home you, what nursing insurance
it's
you signed up with?
Put off by transport.
We recently signed up with Lutheran Brotherhood and would appreciate comments if anybody has experience on which one. It's better if they're all good or what?
I think I have the address if you want to get the address from me.
Thank you. We've already signed up for Lutheran Brotherhood, but thinking about comparisons and stuff.
If we hadn't had nursing home insurance, because I understand all they leave for the wife is, or for the spouse is $25,000. And we were farmers, and Eddie retired at 81, and then he got sick in 86, I think.
Well,
nursing home.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, they, like Mom was saying, they would, you have to pay as long as you can to sell your farm and your house. I guess you can save a house. But, you know, then for Mom, who's in perfect health, she would be living like a pauper on welfare from then on. So I think that's really a good thing is to take out nursing home insurance, and the younger you take it out, the cheaper it is, I think.
Consumer's Guide a few months ago had a comparative study and what to watch out for and questions to ask in taking out nursing home insurance, and I think that would be real valuable for anybody that's going to. Now, they didn't cover a lot of the private companies, you know, like Lutheran Brotherhood. But they had a good list of questions to ask ask the agent, and if he couldn't come up with firm answers, go elsewhere.
I think it was Consumer Reports.
Consumer Reports, that's in
the
library. We have that.
Well, Aid Association for Lutherans, too, is similar to Brotherhood, Lutheran Brotherhood, and they have insurance that you can avail yourself of. As well, but I think it's very important to check these things out.
And
the earlier the better, you know, so that you know that you have protection. Okay. Anything else? Any of you had any exciting new kinds of things that you do?
Come to Holy Village.
Come to Holy Village. Right. Retire. Volunteer.
I do volunteer work at the nursing home in our town.
Yes. Okay. Who else volunteers for? Yeah, you do.
I volunteer at a nearby hospital. Surgical waiting room information desk, and I'm an advocate at a skilled nursing home.
Okay. What else?
We have friends that travel all over the world with Christian Hospital Association, and they don't have a lot of money, but at least they do get to do a lot of traveling. They go to Netherlands for 3, 4, 5 months, and will volunteer in the hospital there, and they've done this all over, and they've really enjoyed that.
Do they have medical background?
No. He works basically on, you know, handyman type things when he gets there and this type of thing.
Mm-hmm. John?
Out of my association with shelter work, I've been connected now with AIDS victims.
Oh, yes.
And I work with a young man that is in the state just before AIDS. And visit him and help him. But the problem is there, how much help do you give? There's this enabling bit. If you do too much, then they lay back and won't do anything on their own. So, at what stage he'll go into AIDS, I don't know. But they say 80% of our people do go into AIDS, and after AIDS, it's about a year before they die.
Mm-hmm. Well, lots of opportunities in the church, you know, at all levels. And I'm sure your local congregation and others, well, there are various kinds of things in that regard. The community, the schools, colleges, and so there are lots of opportunities. And I think the important thing is keep your health, keep a good attitude, look for opportunities, and do them when you get a chance. You know, don't be afraid to dive in and that you're going to make a mistake or do something, but try it out.
At the high school I work at, we have a lot of volunteers. Usually they're the parents of the students, but we couldn't get a lot of our work done if we didn't have those people volunteering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then another area where retired people, I haven't heard any of you teachers say this, but we have several retired teachers that substitute for us.
Uh-huh.
They get paid for that. But.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nice thing to add to your income if you need it.
That's one place where pastors can fill in. We've had some of that too, is if you've got the expertise is to substitute in certain classes, even now as well as in retirement. That's a few extra bucks to help.
What state is that?
Oregon.
Iowa would not let you do that.
Yeah.
Be warned, the kiddies are waiting for substitute teachers.
But yeah, I guess.
Okay, anything else? Yes?
I'm wondering if people might comment on developing hobbies. Nothing has been said at this point yet, and I'd be curious to hear what people have to say.
Okay, let's share a few hobby ideas. I suppose one of mine is photography and fishing.
We've had an interesting gentleman in our parish this past, about 2 years ago, he picked up weaving. Just picked up a magazine and he gets mail ordered a loom, and now he's just worked on it 2 years, but now we just dedicated, he made all pyramids for the church for the season after Pentecost, and stoles for the pastors out of a Norwegian type of a wool, and so we dedicated them. But I mean, this guy's 82 years old, something like that, and just picked it up 2 years ago and worked on it until he's got it so it looked good and did it, and marvelous work.
Wonderful.
My father-in-law chose the hobby of bonsai before he retired, but he did it because he knew he would want to have something to do after he retired.
Right.
He loved it.
What is that?
Bonsai, those miniature Japanese trees.
Oh.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
And our friend was an engineer, and among many other things he does, he makes three, they're wooden trucks for children. They're about this big. They're really quite large, and they're beautifully made. He makes three a year, and then that whole time he's spending trying to find, you know, a child that really can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who couldn't afford it, and somebody who really needs it. And, you know, he does many other things, but he just gets such a joy out of making
those three each year and, yeah, and finding the right place to put them.
Wonderful. Okay, maybe one other idea. I hear the chimes.
Golf and Civil War history.
So, I love it.
Okay, any other? Thank you all very much.